The Place to Be podcast is a proud member of the History of WWE.com website. The History of WWE.com features thousands of complete cards and detailed results from throughout wrestling history from multiple major promotions, in addition to outstanding columns and reviews. It's now also the official home of the Place to Be podcast and Scott and Justin's pay-per-view reviews. So visit us at the History of WWE.com or on Facebook by searching for the History of WWE or the Place to Be podcast, because the History of WWE is now and always the place to be.
Right here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard? Not billiards. It was... Come on, Rick. Come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be, yes.
It's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can...
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said.
Why do I want this?
Yeah.
Because I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it is now time for the Place to Be podcast. And now your hosts, Justin Rosero and Scott Criscolo.
My thoughts cleaned up, pistol on my side. You don't want to hear that thing talk. Let the king talk, check the price and pay attention. Little Wayne, that's what they got to say, a mission.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. It is Vintage Vault Night. We are all jacked up. I am a co-host, Justin Rosero, and with me, as always, the man who once proudly served his country in battle in the War of 1812, my PIC, Scott Criscolo. Scott, how you doing?
Good evening, Mr. Rosero. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the controversial... You know, we were wondering what cheesy joke was going to come of this, but we are at episode 69 The Place to Be podcast.
So many possibilities. Age joke,
There is. We may actually have to make a poll. Maybe Jason Greenhouse can do some fine artwork for episode 69. Although, please keep it clean unless you want to private message it to us.
All right, so you're requesting members private message you with dirty jokes about 69ing. So we're not off to the best start here.
Well, look, it was unavoidable, and I'm actually in a great mood because we finally reached deep within our large cauldron of excellence that is the Vintage Vault V Squared tonight. We're finally at the pay-per-view that I've been waiting for since we began. Finally, I can exercise my demon.
Yes, your cunt is in the sink.
That's fine, because someone else is going to go in there with him tonight. Because I'm and my PIC tonight, we open up the vault as we debut a new brand tonight on the... What do you... Get off my headset. Well, you know something? I'm going to own this podcast. I've already owned WrestleMania. I own every belt because what you're going to do... Splat.
Welcome to the heartland of America as the World Wrestling Federation presents the first ever King of the Ring Extravaganza. Tonight, eight of the toughest superstars in the WWF are banging heads in a grueling single elimination tournament to determine once and for all who is the King of the Ring. In opening round matchups, former WWF champion Hitman Bret Hart will square off against his old nemesis, Ruthless Razor Ramon. Pure perfection meets pure power as Mr. Perfect takes on the sinister Mr. Hughes. Hacksaw Jim Duggan will butt heads with the massive beast from the east, Bam Bam Bigelow. The undefeated Native American Tatanka grapples with the narcissist Lex Luger. Who will survive this grueling test of strength and endurance? Who will be crowned the WWF King of the Ring?
What did he call Mr. Hughes? It was a ruthless? What did he call him? Ruthless?
Ruthless, yes.
The ruthless Mr. Hughes.
Ruthless Mr. Hughes. Of course, tonight on the Place to Be podcast, in the Vintage Vault, we give you the 1993 King of the Ring.
Now, I don't do any tricks.
Well, he probably was hanging somewhere out in downtown Ohio because there are plenty of people that look like him in this show. No knock on most people from. I don't know how many of our Place to Be podcast members are from the state of Ohio.
And if
know.
You are, we apologize that you live there.
Yeah, because we have a bad example of Ohio's best later on. Just to give you a little background, for you younger fans. The King of the Ring is not a new concept. The first King of the Ring tournament was back in 1985, but it was spread out over a couple of house shows or a single night house show. And my PIC could be very proud to know that pretty much the birthplace of the King of the Ring tournament was indeed in Providence, Rhode Island. Most of the King of the Ring tournaments took place at the future Dunk. And after 7 years, well, no, I shouldn't say 7 years. What was it, like five, I believe?
Five, I don't know if it was even that many.
They took a breather and then decided, obviously, to bring it back. Among the previous winners, Tito Santana, Magnificent Morocco, Harley Race. I believe Bret Hart won an earlier one, too, if I'm not mistaken.
I think he won, yes, 1991, I believe.
Yeah.
That's the only one I remember, because I remember a lot of the local promos for it.
Right. There was actually one outdoor King of the Ring tournament that took place at Old Sullivan Stadium before it was called Foxborough Stadium, home of the Patriots. I think it was 86.
All right, here they are right now. I'm bringing them up.
Okay.
1985 was in Foxborough, Mass. Don Morocco won that one.
Mm-hmm.
1986, also in Foxborough. Harley Race won that one.
Mm-hmm.
87 was in Providence. Macho Man won.
Mm-hmm.
88 in Providence. Ted DiBiase won, defeated Savage in the finals. 89 in Providence, Tito Santana won.
Hmm.
No tournament in 1990, and then 91 also in Providence, Bret Hart defeated IRS in the finals.
Do they have the brackets? I'm curious if...
You want them all quick? I can give you all quick. Ready?
Well, actually, I'm curious, at least 89, I'm curious to see if Tito actually beat Martel, if that was part of the... You know,
he may
get a blow.
All right, I'll read them quick. Ready? 85,
okay.
Morocco defeated Junkyard Dog, Les Thornton defeated Steve Lombardi. Paul Orndorff and Bob Orton Jr. went to a double DQ. Pedro beat Johnny Valiant. Tito beat Terry Funk. Jim Brunzel beat The Spoiler. Steamboat beat Valentine. It's a big opening round match. And Iron Sheik defeated the man he loves to humble, B. Brian Blair. Second round, Morocco beat Thornton. Morales advanced on the bye. Santana beat Brunzel. And Sheik beat Steamboat. Big upset there.
Wow.
Morocco defeated Morales, and Sheik defeated Santana. So the final, there was Morocco and Sheik. The two heels. Odd choices.
Oh, God.
I wonder why they did that. I wonder if they didn't do Morocco-Santana.
Yeah, that is very weird.
86. Mr. X and Mike Rotundo, for some reason, received byes. But Iron Sheik lost to Billy Jack Haynes, so quick to fall the next year for him.
Yeah.
Harley defeated George Steele. Morocco and Piper went to a double disqualification.
That might have been a fun match.
Nikolai Volkoff beat our boy Dan Spivey.
Mm-hmm.
Junkyard Dog defeated Paul Orndorff. And Pedro Morales defeated Rudy Diamond. So Mr. X, who received the bye, lost to Billy Jack. Race advanced on the bye. Volkoff defeated Junkyard Dog. And Pedro beat Rotundo. So the two guys who got the bye lost in their first match. Race beat Haynes. And Morales beat Volkoff. So the final, pretty good. Pedro and Harley. Harley won.
Oh, old school.
87, Savage defeated Nikolai, Brunzel beat Ron Bass, Dandy Davis beat Tito. It's a pretty big upset.
Yeah.
Junkyard Dog beat Tama, Haku beat Brutus Beefcake, Martel beat Spivvy, SD Jones beat Sika, and Bundy defeated One Man Gang. It's a pretty cool opening round match.
Wow.
I like how they did some heel stuff.
A lot of beef in that ring. Good God. That's about 900 pounds right there.
Second round, Savage beat Brunzel, Dandy Davis beat the Junkyard Dog, Haku and Martel went to a double countout. Bundy beat SD Jones in the big WrestleMania 1 rematch.
That's right.
So Bundy got a bye to the final. Savage beat Dandy Davis, and then Savage beat Bundy in the finals.
Savage, always the master of the tournament.
Yes.
And of course, in one of his favorite venues.
It would be repeated. So 1988 was the second tournament of the year.
That's right.
DiBiase beat Beefcake in the first round. Patera beat Volkoff. Ron Bass beat The Barbarian. Shawn Michaels beat Dandy Davis. Hercules and Bad News Brown went to a double DQ. Savage beat Virgil. Mike Sharp beat Boris Zukov. And Terry Taylor beat Marty Jannetty. It's a pretty cool opener.
Yeah.
DiBiase beat Patera. Bass beat Shawn. Savage got the bye. Taylor beat Sharp. So pretty good Final Four. DiBiase beat Ron Bass. And Savage beat Terry Taylor. Now imagine if that Shawn beat Bass. That would have been a great Final Four for 88. DiBiase,
yeah.
Shawn, Savage, and Terry Taylor.
Yeah.
And DiBiase beat Savage in the finals, getting revenge for WrestleMania.
They did a lot of these heel versus heel matches, huh?
Yeah, pretty neat.
Yeah.
89. Oof, a dream match for me, right? I can't believe I didn't go to this show. Akeem beat Brutus Beefcake in the opener.
Wow, there you go.
Hercules and Jim Neidhart went to a double DQ. Warlord beat Butch. Tito beat Bad News. Rick Martel beat Bill Woods. Luke beat Nikolai Volkoff. Snuka beat The Barbarian. Haku beat Terry Taylor. So Akeem advanced with a bye. Santana beat The Warlord. Martel beat Luke. and Snuka beat Haku. Final four, Tito defeated Akeem, and your boy Martel defeated Snuka. So the final was Santana Martel.
Oh, I was
Martel,
right.
And
there
Santana
we go.
Won.
So there you go. There was the mysterious blow off that no one ever knew about.
This was quite the tournament. All right. So yeah. Final one was 91. Jerry Sags beat Hawk. Oh, you must have been crying. Listen to this opener. Went to a draw. Ricky Steamboat and Ted DiBiase.
Wow. I wonder how long. Did it say how long the draw was?
No. Well, I'm sure Grant probably has it. Could check it.
Yeah.
Out.
It was probably 20 minutes.
Duggan defeated Knobs. Oh, listen, this is another dream match. IRS defeated the Berserker.
Oh my God.
Skinner beat Virgil. And I actually remember those promos. I remember Skinner calling out Virgil. I have like a tape, like a Superstars on tape, and they have a promo for it.
Nice.
Bret Hart beat Pete Doherty. The Duke of Dorchester made his return.
Yep.
Sid defeated the Warlord. And Undertaker defeated Animal.
Look at those hosses, huh?
I know. So Sags advanced to the final four on a draw. IRS defeated Duggan. Bret beat Skinner. And Sid and Taker went to a double DQ. So Bret advanced to the finals, and IRS defeated Sags, and Bret defeated IRS. A lot of weird matchups.
Mm.
Pretty cool, though.
Tito and Martel in the finals. How about that, huh? Now, see, on a side note, that's the kind of thing I think they could use now to beef up some house shows. Mm. Do tournaments. You know, make that specific night something special. You know, money or, you know, a cash or a title shot or something.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, maybe when we get when the network gets fired up, you know, as we continue our discussions down the line, maybe that's something they could think about.
15 minutes with Steamboat with DiBiase.
That must have been 15 awesome minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, tremendous. So anyway, as we said, the King of the Ring is not a new concept, but obviously the last couple of years, I don't think it was as big a deal in the 80s, even the early, right at the start of the 90s, but definitely the last 2 years, this huge, probably 1991, and you and I talked about this on the SummerSlam 91 vault, that gap between WrestleMania and SummerSlam seems to be getting wider and wider in terms of creative over the last couple of years. After in 91, the whole, and you said it vociferously at that vault, the whole Hogan Slaughter thing by the beginning of August was dead in the water. So having that tag, you know, that main event tag was just abysmal from a creative perspective, because by August nobody cared anymore.
Right.
You know, the Gulf War was over, or Saddam was crawling back into his palace, and Kuwait was free, and nobody cared. In 92, I don't think it was as big a deal in 92, but even still, after Flair had lost the title to Savage at WrestleMania, even the summer just got a little, you know, I don't know, stale.
Yeah,
I agree. And by SummerSlam, even, you know, Flair not in the show is just really weird, you know. I know he had the vertigo problem, right? That was a year before. But, you know, it's just very, very strange. But, so here in 1993, Vince decides, I think we need something in between WrestleMania and SummerSlam. Now, by then, WCW was definitely doing more pay-per-views a year. And we'll document this as you go to our awesome message board, bigelow34.proboards.com. Justin and I are reviewing the classic NWA/WCW pay-per-views. Right now, we're sitting at the end of 1988. But when we get to 92, 93, WCW is doing 6 or 7 shows a year.
Yes.
So there, even this point, 95, of course, by then is when both companies go monthly. But even at this point, WCW is still doing more shows per year. So Vince decided he needs to take advantage of this. So at the beginning of the summer and the end of the spring, to try and clear up the mess that was Caesar's Palace, we have our first consistent non-Big Four show. And for many years, it would be called the Big Five, but this wouldn't totally be part of the... It'd be like the outsider of the clique of pay-per-view.
Frozen today!
It wasn't just incredible of the clique.
Yes, exactly. All right. June 13th, 1993. From the Nutter Center in Dayton, Ohio. One of the older venues around the country. In fact, don't know if you knew this.
Warrior. Fuck it.
Well, that too. Did you know, JR, that the Nutter Center in Dayton, Ohio has played host to the most NCAA tournament games in history?
I believe it. Seems like they always have the opening round there.
Yep, but even back in the 50s and 60s, it was a popular regional finals venue. So they played consistently, like, you know, 2 games a year there for about 25 years. So, a lot of games.
Odd choice, though, for the show. I don't know, it's kind of weird. They built up a lot of the whole middle of, you know, Heartland of America thing. I think they did that a lot so they could push the Brett. I mean, the Hogan Yoko thing. They really pushed that they were in the Heartland of America and Hogan was going to regain defend his title against that evil Jap brother.
And they would stay in the Heartland at our next vault as well. Then they'd go back to their bread and butter part of the country at the end of the year. But anyway, again, the Nutter Center in Dayton, Ohio. It's actually on the campus of the University of Dayton.
The Flyers.
The Flyers of Dayton, correct. But look at this crowd. 6,500. That's not good. Because that place seats at least. It's a basketball venue, so it seats at least like 13,000. Maybe 12,000.
I can tell you in a minute. I'm surprised they didn't do for a big, you know, debut pay-per-view like that.
You would have figured they could go back to that dump in Richfield. They at least probably gotten more seats.
What was the name of the arena? Hare? O'Hare?
It's the Nutter Center.
The Nutter Center.
O'Hare? That's an airport.
No, I thought there's an O'Hara or O'Hare arena in Ohio somewhere.
I don't think so.
Shut the fuck up. All right. No. This is actually the Nutter Center. Oh, you're wrong anyway. It's not on Dayton, Ohio's campus. It's on Wright State University's campus.
The Nutter Center?
Yep.
Then what the hell is...
The Wright State University Nutter Center, formerly known as the Irvin J. Nutter Center, commonly referred to simply as the Nutter Center. Nutter Center. Just outside Dayton, Ohio, on the Wright State University campus in Fairborn, Ohio.
Yeah, well, there's no O'Hare place either, okay?
I'm going to find out what I was thinking of in a second. But okay. For basketball, it held 10,400.
Okay, so it still didn't fill up, which is still very strange. Buy rate of 1.1.
Yeah, 1993, King of the Ring 93 tournament was held here. Okay. So. And actually, a lot of events since.
Well, I am mistaken. I didn't realize it was more than one university in the city of Dayton.
The Dayton Bombers of the ECHL played there until 2009. Hmm. The Dayton Airstrikers of the IBL. The Dayton Warbirds of the NIFL and the Dayton Bulldogs of the NIFL played there.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Well, I stand corrected. The Nutter Center is on Wright State's campus. I thought Wright State was in Chicago. My bad. Okay. Still 6,500, not a sellout. And a buy rate of 1.1, but at this point, buy rates are meaningless. Your announced team, the same as at WrestleMania, Jim Ross, the Macho Man Randy Savage, and Bobby the Brain Heenan, who definitely started getting a groove now. I think these three were very good
point.
So we did have one dark match. Why don't you let us know?
Hang on. I'm still trying to figure out this O'Hara thing. Oh, right here. The land for the arena, originally named the O'Hare Sports Arena, was sold to the Village of Rosemont and became the Rosemont Horizon. So there you go. The Rosemont Horizon was originally called the O'Hare Arena.
Yeah, when? In like 1930?
I don't know. I just knew that there was a place called the O'Hare
Sports
Arena.
And you'll give me crap about my age and you're picking the name of a venue.
Maybe you told me a story about it one time. I don't know.
It's
and you and Toots were scouting talent in the Midwest to steal back for your territory.
Well, that's right. I tell you, there was a great bar there that me, Toots, and Sam Mushnick used to go to. I'll tell you something. We used to pound back the wild turkey. It was awesome. Anyway, we did have a dark match. Why don't you let us know what that is?
It is. Yeah, we talked about this quite a bit, actually, at the Royal Rumble, the USWA crossovers. Mm-hmm. The USWA Unified Champion, Papa Shango, is having quite the rundown in Memphis, pinned Owen Hart to retain his title. And, of course, as we mentioned, that was a pretty hot feud over the summer.
Yes.
Down there doing the whole McMahon invasion and Bret Hart feuding with Jerry Lawler. The Hart family was involved. So a lot going on down there at this time.
Yes.
Pretty cool stuff.
Yeah. And, of course, obviously with Jerry Lawler.
Papa Shango.
Yes. In the WWF. Obviously, there was some cross-promoting. So Vince, you know, everybody thinks Vince tried to squash everybody. But in reality, over the course of the 90s, 2000s, you know, he did take care of a lot of promotions.
Well, it's funny because the territories, you know, their peak was the 70s and early 80s. But to me, the 90s was like the peak of the indies. Like that's when a lot of these indies were really thriving and doing well. Smoky Mountain, USWA, and I think Florida still had one going. There was some stuff in Jersey. So, you know, there are a lot of cool indies, obviously ECW, floating around this time. And I always thought that was pretty cool. Was it ICCW or IWCCW? Yep. I'm trying to think of the ones I used to see in PWI all the time. So,
yep. Now, there were a lot of them. There were a lot of them in New England.
Global was around in the early 90s.
Yep. No, but at this point by 93, clearly the two big ones were obviously WWF and WCW, along with some of these other smaller ones. And in 1993, and we'll get more into this promotion about 2 years from now, another promotion in Eastern Pennsylvania that was pretty much an offshoot of the NWA called Eastern Championship Wrestling gets a makeover this summer of 1993. We'll get more into that, though, down the line in a couple of years when they become the first real major influence crossing over into the big time. All right. Why don't we get down to the nitty-gritty and open up the tournament?
Yeah, really, and this really is, cool idea. I really liked, I don't know, I was always a sucker for tournaments.
So am I.
And so when they announced this concept, they really put it over strong, and they had the qualifying matches all leading up to it, and they really put a lot of work into the qualifiers, and a lot of cool builds to this show.
Yeah, well, the best thing about tournaments, and you and I have talked about this in the past, WrestleMania 4 and obviously other tournaments current day, is that you can come up with matches that you can't have, you can't make storylines out of. A tournament, you can put two guys in that you want to see wrestle without having to build anything for them. They can just go out there and have a good match. And number two, you can create storylines out of tournaments as well if you're stuck. So tournaments are always a booker's best friend. Speaking of booking, one of the characters in our first match here was given a turnaround of booking, if you will. I love this tournament. This might be, maybe top to bottom, my favorite tournament of guys.
Yeah.
I don't think it gets much better after this. Of course, from down the line, as we get down the line of King of the Rings, we don't get many full tournaments on the show after this.
Nope.
There weren't qualifiers, right? Heading into
this?
There were qualifiers. Okay. And you have them, obviously, down here. We have them on our review. Please open up the review. Bigelow34.ProWords.com. Follow along with us. Our first match, and this also is the first pay-per-view, and we'll expound more on this at the end, of where Bret Hart pretty much carried things for most of these next few years in terms of work rate, because God knows there wasn't much any. Not now there isn't, but there is now, but as we get down the line, it does get a little more sparse. Our opening match is a rematch of the 1993 Royal Rumble, as Bret Hart, coming off that absolute buttfuck that he got at WrestleMania, takes on the bad guy, Razor Ramon. And from our last encounter with Razor, when he defeated Bob Backlund at WrestleMania, and on Monday Night Raw, which was slowly growing as a show and as a brand for the WWF at the time, he made a star out of someone. Take a listen.
Be satisfied with him. No, look what he's doing to this poor young man. Oh, no. Well, the kid going up to the top again. This is what happened the last time. Oh, no. 1, 2, 3. Got him. Oh, no.
He didn't get him, but man, he's trying. Give him credit.
The kid.
I played the wrong one.
Was that earlier in the match?
No, that was the rematch.
Oh, okay.
I should have known by Razor's green tights. I forgot he had purple on during that.
Yes, he did. A few weeks before this show, on Monday Night Raw, while my PIC is looking for it.
Razor Ramon playing around and having fun.
Here we go.
You ever see the way a cattle get a bird caught, knock the feathers off it, before it devours it? Same thing.
Oh, my goodness. Whoa, Razor. Razor missing. Boy, he really came in with that elbow. And I think Razor stays.
Chaos at the Manhattan Center.
And that is the iconic May 17th, and we'll talk more about that show a little bit later, but that was a big Raw.
It was. Razor Ramon gets upset by this scrawny little kid with scraggly hair. He was in Global. I believe in Global he was known as the Lightning Kid.
Yep, and his first appearance on Raw, he was the Lightning Kid.
Okay.
And then he was the Cannonball Kid on back-to-back weeks, and he jobbed both shows. Mm-hmm. And then the third week, he was just the Kid.
And he would eventually become the 1-2-3 Kid. And he and Razor Ramon would end up becoming good friends backstage and lead to other things. So Razor was actually getting a little berated on around the World Wrestling Federation.
5-3, he was the Kamikaze Kid.
Okay.
He was never actually Lightning Kid. He had the L Kid on his tight still.
Oh, okay.
Kamikaze Kid, he lost to Doink on 5-3. Then on 5-10, where is he? I know, he lost to Mr. Hughes as the Cannonball Kid. And then 5-17 was his
the upset.
Big upset there. Yep.
Yes. He wins again the following week, right? Doesn't Razor put money up? Doesn't
it was
he
not
pay?
The following week. It was actually after this show.
Oh, okay. All right.
We can talk about it now, though, because actually later in the show is one of my favorite moments. It was on the 6/21 Raw. But the next week after Kid beat Razor, he came out and put up $10,000 of his own money. And or maybe it was like $2,500, and then it was $5,000. He kept upping it each week.
Right.
And this was when they were still doing like the Superstar Line interviews, and they show them as they were being interviewed in the back.
Right.
And Razor was being interviewed, and he's being talked over by, I think, JR and Bobby or whatever, and Savage are kind of talking as he's talking. And you just hear him in the background, someone asks him if they think the Kid's going to accept his challenge. And he's sitting at a table, and it's him, Mr. Perfect, and somebody else. I forget, they're all like on separate calls. Mm-hmm. And he goes, so the amount of money I'm offering the 1-2-3 Kid, I could have Mr. Perfect's mother dancing naked on the table. It is really, really funny. So, one of my favorite kind of forgotten moments. If you throw that show in, you can catch that during that segment. So
that's funny. Cool.
But yeah, Kid would abscond with Razor's money. They'd fight. He'd knock Razor down, grab the money, and jump into a waiting car. And this slowly starts a little change in attitude of Razor Ramon. But here he's still a heel.
Yes. And he takes on the guy that beat him the previous, 6 months earlier in Sacramento at the Royal Rumble. Obviously, no title on the line here, but certainly a big match. I mean, they definitely were pumping it up as if winning this tournament was like being the champion.
Yeah, they definitely were.
And only once ever would they do what I thought they should have done from the beginning. Like they did, like winning the Royal Rumble would get you the title shot at WrestleMania. Winning this tournament should have gotten you the title shot at SummerSlam. And actually, they wouldn't use that until the very last year they had it as a pay-per-view. But this is a tremendous opener. And, you know, over time, as the click gets bigger, they say what they want about Bret Hart. But you know what? Besides wrestling each other, nobody made that group of guys look any better than he did.
No, definitely not.
It would obviously come to play with another character, one of your favorites, which will debut later on down the line. But here, for the second time in 6 months, Bret Hart makes Scott Hall look like $1 million.
Yep, and we should get into the qualifying matches. Bret was given a bye because he was the last champion. Mm-hmm. And they were really making it like he was the favorite heading in. And Razor defeated Tito Santana in one of his final televised matches as El Matador. Right. So there's the qualifiers. And I really like this match. Not as good as the Rumble, but still pretty good. They go for a solid 10 minutes. They have obviously had good chemistry still stemming from the Rumble match. And this time, Bret does not get the sharpshooter. Instead, Razor goes for a superplex and Bret falls on him as he's coming off and he gets the pin.
But a great opener, good way to start the show, and the first of a long and busy night for the Hitman. So a great opener, back and forth.
Actually, we have reverse superplex, but I thought it was a let me check. I thought he like reversed the Razor's edge or something. Like Razor's back.
According to Graham, it says Bret Hart pinned Razor Ramon by reversing a back suplex off the top and landing on top.
Okay, so he did. So maybe I'm just thinking of during the match, he just reverses the Razor's edge.
Razor's edge, yeah. But according to Graham, we're both on the same page.
All right.
Of course, we will check the wonderful history of WWE.com to let you know what any of these matches are. There's a couple of them on any DVDs. There is no King of the Ring set, so there's no anthology. This pay-per-view is not on DVD unless you live in England. The hot Scott there, Kieran Polland, could probably get it because you can get it on Silver Vision and the tagged classics, most likely. But I have the original Coliseum. What do you? Do you have a dub?
I have the original pay-per-view copy.
You have the pay-per-view copy. All right, I have the Coliseum video copy.
All right, so let's move on to our next. Bret Hart advances. Yep. We'll talk about him more in a minute.
Yep.
So, second match, we see a new debuting star, and that is Mr. Hughes, portrayed by Curtis Hughes. Attended Kansas State University, began playing football. Then he began training with Sonny Myers and a colleague of yours, Bob Geigel, to become a professional wrestler.
That's right.
1988, he made his debut in the AWA as Curtis the Cat Hughes, a friendly fan favorite. He then moved on to WCW with the gimmick The Big Cat, and then became an enforcer character who started wearing a suit and tie to the ring and changed his name to Mr. Hughes. He was at a few different factions, such as the York Foundation. He worked the indie circuit a little bit and then brought in on a short-term deal to the WWF, and he was brought in by Harvey Whippleman. And him, Harvey, and our friend, El Guionte! Very nice, El Guionte.
Emmett.
M. Harvey and Mr. Hughes, they attacked The Undertaker on Raw. After Raw, and then The Undertaker, I'm sorry, it's on Superstars, not Raw. Not the Raw. El Guionte comes out to the ring with this mysterious black African man, Mr. Hughes. They bring down Harvey Whippleman. They come down and they steal the urn. That's where The Undertaker keeps his ashes to smoke.
Never thought that you would find a proper way to use this stupid song. Considering how much you love Frenchie Martin, actually, I never thought we'd ever hear this again.
And actually, Hughes came in on his own, and then Harvey ended up getting a job as his manager. He kind of made a pitch saying he'd be the best choice for him. So I'm trying to find the exact date of when they assaulted him, but Grant doesn't seem to have it. I know it was in May. They came down to the ring, and actually, they put a really good beating down on him. They really wiped him out.
Yes.
And they stole the urn, and Taker would actually be gone until SummerSlam. So.
Yep. But it would be a storyline used quite often over the next 2 years.
Yes.
Stealing Taker's urn, because, as usual, the poor guy can't catch a break in terms of creative advances. But so anyway, thanks to El Guionte.
We'll see more of El Guionte later.
Yes, not much. Mr. Hughes is on the front burner here. And he gets his match against a guy who's really, could anybody next to Bret, could anybody have been more popular right now? Really?
No, on the roster. Is very over, especially here.
Yeah. Big pop from the crowd, from the Dayton crowd. And the match itself is crap. Not by any, it's just not, I don't know, it's, you got two different styles, and, you know, Mr. Hughes was never a work rate marvel to begin with.
I always like the fact that it was Mr. Perfect and Mr. Hughes. I like the battle of the misters. But Perfect was really portrayed as the underdog here, actually, surprisingly enough. They made it like it would be a kind of a surprise if Hughes, you know, if he could get by Hughes, because Hughes was put over pretty strong since he debuted. Mm-hmm. The qualifying matches, Perfect beat Doink, and actually took three attempts. The first two times they went to draws, and then at the third match, Perfect finally won in advance. And actually, those matches are kind of hitting classics. They were really good. They had,
Of course.
I think two were on Superstars, and one was on Raw, I think. Check those out on YouTube or something if you get a chance. They really worked hard, those two guys. And, of course, there's still Matt Bourne. And they're very often forgotten matches that I'd like to see pop up somewhere someday.
Yeah.
And Hughes beat Kamala in the antithesis. I still can't say it.
Oh, but you could say El Guionte.
El Guionte's antithesis.
He should have been at ringside. See, here's a case where you could have used...
It would have taken him the whole match to get the match only 6 minutes. It would have taken him 6 minutes to walk to the ring.
Yeah, that's true, I guess. He should have been standing there already. But, the match is not very good. It's, you know, there's a lot of posturing.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is, can Perfect escape the match? And he does. He ends up winning by DQ because Hughes grabs the urn, and then he actually clocks Perfect with it at one point, and Perfect's, like, kind of holding his head. But actually, the more important part of this was during the match, they had a little inset with Bret, and they asked Bret who he'd rather face, and he actually picks Perfect, because he said he'd rather wrestle than brawl, and that'll play a role later. But
yes. It's funny, the qualifying matches are two completely different matches. Perfect defeats Doink, which we just mentioned is tremendous. Meanwhile, Mr. Hughes beat Kamala.
Yep.
It's terrible. So, Mr. Perfect advances, and does indeed face Bret Hart in the semifinals, and you can already tell that the world is salivating over that rematch.
And I was glad that they did go that way and didn't go with the obvious face heel Bret Hart, Mr. Hughes match, which I figured, I think at the time, I just assumed that's what they were going to do.
Exactly, right.
So, and it was obvious heading into this that the two favorites were Perfect and Bret. I mean, you figured one of them was going to win this. So it was just a matter of would they do Razor Perfect, Bret Hughes, and I guess, I don't think I really thought they'd do Bret Perfect, but I'm glad they did, so.
No, I am as well.
Yeah, so Perfect advances, you know, decent little match, and Mr. Hughes would now be gone for a while until, what, 97's his next show up?
Is that it?
Yeah, I think 90, early 97, and then
yeah.
Before his final one later in the decade.
Yes. So we have two in the semifinals, Mr. Mm-hmm. Bret the Hitman Hart and Mr. Perfect. And now...
Yeah.
I'd like everyone to come in. Bob Geigel, Sam Mushnick, George Hackenschmidt, all of my friends are in the room here. What's his name? Stecker, the crippler guy, whatever your name is. All of my broken noses and gnarled body parts. Celebrate with me, because for the last time, my PIC, who's been giggling like a schoolgirl for 8 years worth of pay-per-views, no longer can play this.
No, I think we've heard it enough. I'm done. I'm over it.
I know why. Let's talk about this match. Our third first-round match...
I got my 2x4... I got the American flag, American flag, American flag.
Yeah.
I got my 2x4. I got the American flag.
Yeah, everybody. Dance, come on, everybody.
Well, I hate to burst your bubble. I hate to burst your bubble, but I talked with the Place to Be board of directors. And next week's Vintage Vault, we're going to go back to WrestleMania 3 when Jim Duggan debuted, and we're going to redo all the events featuring Jim Duggan.
A lot of times when you're getting ready to wrestle, you're in the back of the dressing room, and you're lacing up your boots, and you're kind of thinking, geez, this guy I'm wrestling today is going to be awful tough.
No, we're not. The Beast of the East... Bam Bam Bigelow, coming off his no-show at WrestleMania, screwed. But next to Bret Hart, might have been a big favorite in this tournament, taking on the master of the flying snot rocket.
Have you seen Sapphire, baby?
No, I haven't, Dust, but we're all still looking for her.
And then he goes and goes, looks for her, and never comes back. Qualifying matches, Bam Bam Bigelow defeated Typhoon, a lot of beef in that ring, and the drooling buffoon defeated Papa Shango. You know what I just realized? Can you imagine, though, he never won any of those other King of the Rings?
I don't think he ever was even in any of them, the ones we
I don't think he was even this guy who wins every...
Maybe he was. I remember mentioning him at least once.
We have to ask the Rain Man of Stats, the Sanchez. I'll have to ask the Rain Man of Stats, the Sanchez, to check that out because, you know, his record, he looked it up. His record for those 4 years was like 187-3. And I can't believe he never was in
well,
any
of the pay-per-view record, though, is 9-8-1. But if you could take out the Rumbles and Survivor matches, straight up, he was 7-2. So,
yeah. 7-2.
The only time he was pinned on pay-per-view was DiBiase at WrestleMania 4 and Bigelow here.
Good. So let us. I'm actually dancing like Alex Wright. Oh! Everybody dance with me.
I'd pay good money to see you dancing naked on a table.
You'd pay good money to see that man topless.
I got the American flag, American flag, American flag.
But admit it. Admit it. You were rooting for Bigelow. Say it. Come on, I dare you. Say it.
Of course I was. Are you out of your mind? Of course I was.
Okay.
I can't believe Duggan is even still around at this point.
I don't know. I didn't think he'd still be around after 7-6 years. Well, to my good friend Kieran Pollan, the Hot Scott, and to Todd Weber, Rob Houston, I hope you're enjoying this, because you're never going to hear it again. Well, I wouldn't say never hear it again. I'm sure you'll find something, but he is not on WWF/E pay-per-view again for 12 years. 12 glorious years.
Well, maybe we'll come up with something. We'll see. The wheels may be in motion.
Anyway, let's talk about the winner of this match. The winner. All right, this is in 1990. The guy who earned the win. The Beast of the East. Bam, bam. Good, wait for the end. Come on. Where's the end? Off into the sunset you go, you drooling bastard. See ya. Oh, stop it. No. Put it away. Get Dennis Stamp out. Dennis Stamp says he will no longer be booked if he's at this show. All right.
I don't do any tricks.
Well, neither does the guy who just left either. He can blow snot rockets out in the crowd. I'm bitching Jesse somewhere. Jesse the Body is smiling with delight as I am to see him leave. We have one first round match remaining.
Of course, that is Tatanka taking on the narcissist Lex Luger.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, no one can pronounce the names correctly at this point.
Narcissist.
Now, this was a pretty intriguing matchup, honestly, heading in at the time, because both guys were undefeated. And they made a point of saying that in the build-up and this match itself.
Yes.
Tatanka obviously had a 16-month undefeated streak at this point.
Right.
Luger, you know, since January, but still, two undefeated guys. So something had to give here.
Yes.
Unfortunately, they kind of booked themselves into the corner because they don't want either man to lose, really, yet. So neither could win. So we kind of get the lame 15-minute time limit draw, which then makes this match kind of blah because there's a lot of rest holds and time killing. So for the qualifying matches, Lex Luger defeated Bob Backlund in a pretty decent match. And Tatanka.
Yes.
Defeated El Gigante.
Yes, very nice.
The Native American Tatanka with his red face came in and defeated the Giant Gonzalez with the Mary Fern, Fair Man and Fern body.
Yes.
El Gigante.
Yes, how much?
Very
nice. Could you imagine if this was Luger against him? Oh, God.
That would have been awesome.
Oh, God, that would have been horrible. I actually like this match.
Yeah, it's fine. It's just, I just hate those guaranteed draws.
Yeah, I don't like draws either. And by the way, folks, fans, I don't dislike Tatanka. This isn't, when JR plays this, it's not because I hate Tatanka. This song is just abysmally bad. I don't even know if abysmally is a word, but I don't care. It's just a hideous song. Every song
it's
on that
abysmally
album.
Abysmally bad.
Abysmally bad, Giante, is just terrible. But I don't dislike Tatanka at all. And I think the fact this was a draw is immensely disappointing.
Of the World Wrestling Federation.
So, your semifinals are Bam Bam Bigelow, moves on, a.k.a. One Man Gang, to the finals, while we have Bret the Hitman Hart taking on Mr. Perfect. So, salivate over that one for a moment. But we leave the tournament. Oh, no, we don't.
Gentlemen, as you know, the Ultimate Warrior. Fuck it.
Yeah, what you said. The tournament is already coming up roses. We've had four matches so far.
Your cunt is in the sink.
And Duggan's going to go clean it up.
<That's> gross. fucking pig.
We move on to the... Well, before we do that... Stop it. He's gone. He's out the door. He's in the sink. He's not booked. He's not involved.
All right. Set up our second round matchup.
All right. Our lone semifinal is probably one of the most, I don't want to say forgotten, but definitely when you think of one of the greatest matches in the history of pay-per-view, and you think of these two guys, this match doesn't immediately come to mind, and that's a fact. Bret Hart, the Hitman, and Mr. Perfect battle for a slot in the finals of this tournament to take on Bam Bam Bigelow. And what precedes this, I don't know, I know you were searching for it.
No, I couldn't find it.
Couldn't find it? Bummer. There is a tremendous, it's on, this match is on Brett's DVD. Because Brett will always say, and I'm pretty sure, right, he said it in his book, he definitely said it on the DVD, he holds immense respect.
Yes.
For Kurt Hennig. So he definitely picked the in my opinion, the better of the two matches. Of course, everyone thinks about SummerSlam 91, and that was 4.5 stars, and Perfect was a cripple. Now you've got both of them. Brett is more experienced. Perfect is healthy. You couldn't ask for anything better.
And now before the match, they have an interview with Mean Gene.
Mm-hmm.
And as we mentioned before, Brett had said he'd rather face Mr. Perfect. So Gene brings that up, stirring the shit as always. And he says, to me, that sounds like maybe Brett thought you'd be easier to beat than Hughes was. And Brett, of course, stammers and tries to correct himself, saying, no, I'd rather wrestle than brawl. You know, I'd rather just have the scientific match. And so they start to argue, and Gene yells at them to calm down, even though he had started the fight.
I know.
So then Gene talks about their fathers, Stu and Larry, and asks if they ever fought. And they have a great exchange back and forth about my dad beat your dad, and your dad could never beat my dad. And, you know, the tension kind of rises a little bit, and then Perfect brings up SummerSlam, saying that Brett, you know, he owes Brett from SummerSlam, and just a great interview that really set the tone for what would be an awesome match. Funny stuff. If you've ever seen that interview, I'm sure most people have, but if you haven't, check it out. It's pretty cool.
I believe it does preface the actual match on the Brett DVD.
Okay.
I believe it's right before it, so. Match is 19 minutes, and there's no complaints. None. It's not five. It's not perfect. It's not perfect. It's almost perfect. We both gave it 4.5 out of five.
Yeah.
It is an awesome match.
Non-stop.
Pace is good. Yeah, the pace is good. It's a much different philosophy. It's a much different match philosophically than the one at SummerSlam 91.
Right. Well, they're both faces here, both very over. Perfect wrestles a little heelish, and Brett takes a nasty bump into the guardrail, and he wipes out a cameraman.
Yep.
And then Perfect ends up getting, trying to think of the word, I guess, deked in by Brett, and Brett gets him with a small package for the win.
Yep.
But
yep.
Just textbook pure wrestling by these two.
Yes, and it just shows we've already the show is probably barely an hour old, and Brett has already wrestled in half of it. I mean, almost 30 minutes in the ring so far against two guys who are not pushovers. You're talking 11 minutes with a big, stiff hitter like Razor Ramon, and then 19 minutes with one of the greatest in-ring guys of all time.
And this was obviously, you know, the winner was going to be fighting Bigelow, who was going to get the bye. So to me, obviously, you knew coming out of this, the winner of this was probably going to win the tournament. Just a matter of which guy they wanted to push. Were they going to get Brett the makeup, the mulligan from WrestleMania, or were they going to push Perfect, a guy that had kind of been hanging on, waiting maybe for that push and thought he deserved it. So, you know, looking back, I think I really thought they were going to go with Perfect over Brett at this point, to be honest with you.
I tell you, it's what's upsetting, and we'll get more into this in a couple minutes when we have our next match after the break, but so many guys on this roster at this point, and we talked about this point last week on the vault as well, where it could have been in line easily. This was a great year to be wide open when it came to main event guys and championship contenders.
Mm-hmm.
You could have really had fun.
Yeah, they had a lot of guys they could have went with.
A lot of guys they could have went with. And this is probably the moment where Savage is probably like, what the, you know, he probably has nothing against Ross, nothing against Bobby, but he's probably thinking to himself, what the fuck am I sitting at this table for?
Yeah, he could have really been involved heavily in this tournament as well.
I mean, there could have, I should be out there. I should be out there, yeah! You know? Instead, he's commentating. Is his commentating bad? Absolutely not. Incredibly entertaining. But
they might have been better off leaving Tatanka in a different match and putting Savage in with Luger, and then Savage advances. The final four, Brett Perfect, Savage, Bigelow would have been pretty awesome.
It would have been incredible. And then you would have had, I mean, Savage would have still laid down for Bigelow because Bigelow needed the push. But hell, if it could have had a consolation match, would you have had Perfect and Savage? Duh.
Any of those combinations, yes.
Yeah. Tremendous.
Yep.
So in the end, Brett gets the win, and in a moment that stands the test of time, a grizzled and begrudging Mr. Perfect shakes Brett's hand after the match. So your King of the Ring championship final is Brett the Hitman Hart and the Beast from the East, Bam Bam Bigelow. You must have been torn up because you were a big Brett Mark in your early days.
Yeah, so I wasn't. You must have been
pretty torn up here.
I wasn't the huge Bigelow fan right out of the gate. I liked him, but Brett, my loyalty was clearly with Brett. So
okay. And then of course you had the Doink poster, so I'm sure you were very upset that
yes.
he wasn't in this tournament.
That was a little bit later, but yes.
Yeah, not in front of Doink. So there you go. So we're going to take a break because we still got our next match. I got to wind up my PIC here because he's ready to if you listened to last week's headline show when he went on his anti-Red Sox rant.
I got some good props on that one, surprisingly enough. Only a couple of people that I angered, and I had to get it off my chest. I calmed down today. I got into some fights on Facebook later on at night.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Well, I got, I did get one complaint that we didn't have someone representing Red Sox fans on the show.
Who gives a fuck about that?
But I knew you were going to say that. You know who I'm talking about, too.
Who? Dumbass Rotella?
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, him and
we want to know why you didn't let him on to defend his team.
Well, yeah, friggin' mushmouth. He wouldn't have been able to defend himself anyway.
By that time of night, when he kid, he told me he was asleep. He fell asleep before the game.
Of course,
ended.
He was probably watching Full House, and then he passed out. I doubt he's even watching the game. Him and D-Bag LaRue, the two pink hat Red Sox fanboys, don't know what the fuck they're even talking about.
All right, but we'll get more on that next week. We'll talk more baseball later in the week on our headline show. All right, we're going to take a breather because, like I said, we got a lot of stuff left to discuss because this next match is going to take us quite a bit of time. So why don't we take a breather? I'm going to have Toots and Stanislaus get me a Jack and Coke. And we'll take a break and say hi to our good friends, the champ and the announcer, our friends from WrestleChat.net. Because
promotional considerations paid for by the following very nice.
How many pro wrestling news websites do you visit to get your daily news? 3, 4, maybe 5? Do yourself a favor and make that number 1. WrestleChat.net, the only professional wrestling news site that brings you all wrestling news all day long, and is home of the critically acclaimed Still Real to Us podcast, starring former CZW ROH and ECW announcer Eric Arjulo and the champ Jeff Peck. That's WrestleChat.net. WrestleChat, it's where it's at.
Very nice, the champ, Jeff Peck. Yeah. Awesome. Oh, for God.
I got my 2x4.
Oh, for Christ's sakes. What if WrestleChat.net didn't want that in part of their promo?
How do you know they don't?
Because Eric Gargiulo, never mind. Anyway, WrestleChat.net is your source for all the news and notes from around professional wrestling, as well as some MMA as well. You can check out their message board. They have a lot of good stuff going on over there. And while you're checking the news and notes, right on the right side of the page is the link to right here, placetobe.podbean.com. You can go right to our right to the page, and you can listen to us right out of WrestleChat.net. And I have not had a chance, unfortunately. At work, I don't really listen to a lot at home, but at work, I like to listen to our podcast, and I have not been able to open up their podcast on the site, but I've heard some great things from other people about it, Mr. Gargiulo and Mr. Peck. I've heard they've done a great job. I'm going to try and hopefully see if my IT guys can get the site to come up. But
I'm sure it'll be top of their priority list at work.
Well,
the network's down. A&E's got some problems. We're trying to get this take going, but Scott needs WrestleChat.net podcast up, so we'll send some help over right away.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody's watching what's that? Not Suddenly Susan. What that stupid show is. Old Christine or God knows what else. There'll be a reality show on Lifetime with El Gigante, yes. But in any event, go to WrestleChat.net. It's your source for all your news and notes in professional wrestling.
You know, my name is Ox Baker, and I like to beat people up, and this is the place that I wanna be.
And he could stand right next to El Gigante.
I got the American flag.
Oh, for God's sakes. Three matches ago, please. Stanislaus.
Only we would fucking use Borat jokes like 8 years after the movie came out.
Hey, you know what?
Well, I think it's okay because it developed ironically. It didn't start as Borat jokes. It started as me trying to do a French accent. So that's, yeah. You know, it's not like we decided to do the Borat to be funny. Yeah.
French accent, making fun of an Argentinian guy. That's even better. Anyway, of course, this is the 1993 King
it's
of
French
the Ring.
Province, isn't it? Argentina.
What? What are you, Vince, making up wars and storylines now? You're attacking the French? All right. We take a breather from the tournament for now, because the next before we do that, before we move on, we don't have the audio clip, unfortunately, but one of the greatest, truly one of the greatest man on the street interviews in the history of professional wrestling, if not the history of television, occurs here right before our next match. And my PIC just been waiting for this moment to be able to talk about this. So floor is yours.
Yes. Terry Taylor, who we mentioned back at the Royal Rumble, had come back and was wrestling as Terrific Terry Taylor. Of course, that went about as well as you would think, because none of you probably even remember that run he had. And actually, there was a French blockade in Argentina in the mid-1800s, so there was some involvement there.
Yes, I was there with Toots. Yes. We were booking a show.
And French is spoken in Argentina, thanks to some of the immigrants.
I can't believe you looked that up. was the O'Hare Center built there? Was that going to be built there too?
Rosemont, how do you not know that? Rosemont Horizon was originally the O'Hare Center. So
did anyway. It have a date on it? We'll have to look that up. I don't even know what the date is on that. It's got to be before the 50s. Anyway, all right, so Terry Taylor.
So Terry like, goes into the audience, and they're like, yeah, let's go out there. Let's interview a classic middle America, Dayton, Ohio, family that probably graduated from the college there. And here we go. We got this guy. Kind of looks like our friend, a younger version of our friend Andy Flanagan. He's got a gray polo shirt, jeans on.
Yes.
We get the mom. We get the two kids. Of course, the daughter, no shoes on, as you would expect. Mm-hmm. And then we have Wesley with his Hulk Hogan shirt, his Undertaker hat I think he had on. And he was all fired up. So Terry Taylor, we talked to the dad. Who's going to win the main event? Hulk Hogan all the way. We get the wife. Do you like Bret Hart? Oh, yeah. We got the daughter walking around barefoot.
Yep.
And then...
probably has no tongue.
We have... and hello, son. What's your name? Wesley! You having a good time?
Yeah!
Wesley was awesome. Highlight of King of the Ring, Wesley. I wonder what that kid's up to now and if he still watches wrestling. Wesley, if you're listening to this show, write us. We want to have you on.
Yes. He looked like, you know who he looked like? He was a somewhat nastier looking version of Chunk from the Goonies. Well, he looks like Chunk from the Goonies now. It's a tremendous crowd interview. One of the greatest of all time. I think Terry Taylor probably thought to himself, where the hell did I find this?
Tricks.
Maybe Wesley does tricks and maybe the daughter can grow a tongue. It's like the daughter from National Lampoon's Vacation. All right. Are you ready?
You're very perverse tonight. You want the 8-year-old girl to grow a tongue. Is this like your crush on Samantha with the plaid shorts?
P.S. Your cunt is in the sink.
Oh boy! All right, let's move on here. We do have, in case no one knows, we do have a World Wrestling Federation championship match. For those that may have forgotten who the champion was. Let us remind you. Let us turn back the clock. That is... what kind of horrible karaoke version of that song is?
I don't know. YouTube sucks. They always have his karaoke versions or fat kids in their basement singing the fucking song. That's all I can ever find.
Who the hell's even singing this?
It says the picture is from the very best of Cool in the Gang.
Well, this is not Cool in the Gang. It sounds like a bunch of guys...
Only you would know what the fuck Cool in the Gang sounds like. Who gives a shit? It's a song. The whole point. We're celebrating. Yeah, you're always gonna you guys are gonna shit everyone's cereal. We can't just play the song and laugh and talk about Hulk Hogan. He was gonna have an issue. That's not Cool in the Gang. Cool in the Gang doesn't sound like that.
Hey, well, you know what? Cool in the Gang wouldn't have showed up anyway. It sounds like the WCW version of Cool in the Gang.
It's the Simon Cowell remix.
Yes. Okay. We all know what happened at the end of WrestleMania 9. We all know who the World Wrestling Federation champion is, because it has to be. But finally...
this definitely is not Cool in the Gang.
No. But we finally have reached the end of the line. The end of the line is upon us. It's a very celebratory show tonight. A lot of goodbyes, thank God. This one is not personal for me, but this is just one that's good for the company. It's good for business. For on this night in Dayton, Ohio, is probably officially the end of the Federation era. For on this night, your World Wrestling Federation champion, the Icon, Hulk Hogan, takes on the guy who he, among many people that he screwed over in Vegas, Yokozuna. Now, you would think... That song is, of course, called A Hulkster in Heaven. And the first chapter of his career is going straight to heaven as well. For on this night in Dayton, Ohio, the end is upon us. On this night, Yokozuna, with a leg drop, no irony there, defeats the All-American American. No, not Jack Swagger. The original All-American. You were my friend. You were my friend. Cool in the Gang singing that would have been so much better.
It sounded like Cool in the Gang.
All right. Just to give everyone the final farewell here, Hulk Hogan has wrestled 25 pay-per-view matches in 8 years. His final record, 17... 17 wins, 7 losses, 1 draw. And he was only pinned 3 times. By the Ultimate Warrior at WrestleMania 6. By the Undertaker at the 1991 Survivor Series. And here. And of those 3 pinfalls, only one was clean. And that was, of course, to the Ultimate Warrior. So what are the other 4 losses? Well, 87 Survivor Series.
Yep.
No, yeah, 87 Survivor Series. You counted Rumbles, right? The 89 Rumble.
Yeah, I'm sure it's counting all those.
Yeah, they're 89 Rumble. He won at SummerSlam 90. What's the draw?
WrestleMania 4.
Oh, of course. The double DQ. Yes. Let's see. SummerSlam 89. Let's see. Survivor Series 89. He won at WrestleMania 1. Wrestling Classic. Well, yeah. WrestleMania 2, he won. WrestleMania 3, he won. 87 Survivor Series, he lost. That's 1.
I don't think we counted the Classic usually.
Okay. Well, he won that anyway, so that's actually 18 wins. He beat Piper. Let's see. He lost Survivor Series 87, 88 Rumble. He was one match, and it's a draw at WrestleMania 4. He won at SummerSlam 88. He won at Survivor Series 88. Lost the Rumble in 89, so that's, what, three. Then WrestleMania 5, he won. SummerSlam 89, he won. Survivor Series 89, he won. Rumble 90, he won. 6, he lost, so that's one there. SummerSlam 90, he won by countout. Survivor Series 90, he won twice. He won his original Survivor Series match, and then he won the Survivor match, Ultimate Survivor match. Rumble 91, he won. 7, he won. SummerSlam, he won. And then Survivor Series, he lost. He won at Tuesday in Texas. He lost the Rumble in 92. He won at WrestleMania 8 by DQ. He lost at WrestleMania 9, and he won at WrestleMania 9. Is that 7 losses? Yeah, it is. Okay.
I don't know. I stopped listening a while ago.
Well, there goes. So did everyone else that was in the WWF at this point when it came to him. So there you go. He's done. Finished. He would not be on television again in the World Wrestling Federation until February of 2002. Yes, we'll see you again, but fortunately not for a very, very long time. This match happened because, as said backstage, Hulk Hogan would not drop the belt to Bret Hart. Although, now I'm reading things that was never meant to be the case anyway.
No, there's a few different things, and Bret kind of says it in his book as if Vince was playing them both against each other. Mm-hmm. And he didn't know who to trust. You know, Hogan was denying it, and Vince was telling Hogan that he wanted him to be the champion, and he was telling Bret that Hogan wouldn't lay down for him, and it seemed like he was kind of pitting them against each other, which is something, according to Bret and a few other guys, that Vince liked to do to kind of create tension between guys to, you know, prevent any kind of comfort level. So, you know, who knows what the real plan was. You know, there's rumors that there was a photo shoot to set up SummerSlam, and that was a rumored SummerSlam main event was Bret and Hogan, and Hogan would have retained here. Who knows, but...
But it didn't matter anyway.
Yeah, because Hogan, obviously, at this point, had pissed off Vince, and they were having their issues. During this time, Hogan was off. You know, we talked about how he was off TV for a while. He you know, didn't even appear on TV. He didn't defend his title, that's for sure.
No.
He was actually filming Thunder in Paradise. I think it was the pilot. I don't think it was the show yet. They had, like, that little two-hour movie pilot.
Yes.
And Mean Gene caught up to him on the set.
Time champion, Hulk Hogan. I ran down recently on the set of his made-for-television movie, Thunder in Paradise. This is what it's all about at the King of the Ring on June 13th. We're just weeks away from the big showdown in Dayton, Ohio. World Wrestling Federation champion Hulk Hogan defending against the big 505-pound Japanese superstar, Yokozuna. You are here with the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart, your new and improved manager. Hulkster, before we talk titles... Before we talk made-for-television movies, before we talk about anything else, what in the world is your Harley Davidson doing parked in the water here at the beach?
That's a sore subject with him, Mean Gene. You know, look at his motorcycle. He's got to get rust all of it. He don't want to talk about that.
He wrote it.
That's right, man.
Well, you know, just before I ran into the salt water, brother, I took her out of the shower. And as I was washing her down and stroking her tanks, as I wrapped the largest legs in the world around her gas tanks, brother, all of a sudden, I got hit between the eyes with a lightning bolt. And as I ran down to the shores of the Pacific Ocean, I put the front forks of my wide glide in about 3 feet of salt water. And with a palm tree in one hand and a hippie in the other, I looked to the big brother in the sky. And I said, in Dayton, Ohio, who's going to be king of the ring? Guess what happened, Gino?
I want to know the answer.
The python started to swell. The veins down the pythons were filled with ice-cold water, brother. And as I felt the power of the Hulkamaniacs, as I felt the power of the pythons, and as I realized for the fifth time I was the greatest champion there ever was, ever is, or ever will be, I also realized
that Yokozuna, 525 pounds of stench, wart-infested Japanese, was going over my head for the ride. And as I slammed him down in the center of the ring, he will bow to Hulkamania.
What the fuck is he talking about?
Did he just say disgusting stench to Japanese?
Yes.
And he was Yokozuna. And he was stroking something, and God, go away. The match itself is pretty substandard, as usual with Hogan. But then we get the mysterious photographer with the fake beard, and he gets on the apron. He shoots a picture. A flash goes in Hogan's eyes. And
I believe, of course, the cameraman was portrayed by Harvey Whippleman. But he never plays a role in any storyline. They don't reveal who it was or anything like that.
No.
They just make it like, I think they end up saying to someone Fuji hired.
Yeah.
While you were in Hollywood making movies, Thunder Lips, I was winning world title.
Oh, it would have been great if he was the one with the beard mustache. That would have been awesome.
I know. How would I come back?
That would have been tremendous.
Well, that didn't surprise me a bit because Lou Albano is a big, fat, sloppy pig.
We're going to see him again soon. So you better get that cut ready again.
We haven't heard in a while. I figured we would do.
Yes, and we haven't seen him in a while. Big fat sloppy pig. We'll be seeing him soon as well.
Not as fat and sloppy though when he comes back.
No, age cut in, and then he was sick as well. So,
you know what else we haven't heard in a while?
What's that?
I got my 2x4.
You know, I think Simon Cowell's making plenty of money doing this X Factor show. I don't think he needs the extra royalties.
They should have him on. They should have Doug in on singing the song and mopping the floor.
Yeah, pretty much. Jimmy Hart's gone too, right?
Yes.
Jimmy Hart is gone.
To never reappear.
No.
Well, cameos in here and there and then the Hall of Fame, but never as a TV character.
Oh, incidentally, why don't we mention now, because we didn't mention it earlier, 1993, speaking of, would be the very first year of the official WWF/E Hall of Fame. Would be created.
That's the American flag.
And he's not in there. At this point. But the first inductee into the WWF at the time Hall of Fame is, of course, it could be no one else other than the boss, Andre the Giant.
Yes, it was early 93. Yep. After he passed away, they announced that he would be in the Hall of Fame.
Yes. Next year, when we and obviously from this point forward, Justin and I will give you the yearly classes, at least the first.
Yeah, 94 starts the first one.
Yeah. What did you think as you were watching at this point? Did you think this was it for Hogan? Did you think he was going to come back at all?
Yeah, I definitely thought he was at the time. I don't think I expected him to be gone like that. I mean, why would we? You know, he just kind of came back. So,
right.
I definitely remember being surprised at Yoko winning, but I think we just figured that Hogan would be back and win it back at SummerSlam or something. So, pretty big upset though at the time. It definitely seemed like they were setting it up for Hogan just to defeat him. Because he didn't really beat him in a regular match, so you figure this was just kind of a chance for Hogan to get the win officially and move on. So, that, to me, heading in, that's what it seemed like. And they said ahead of time that Beefcake was going to be with him at ringside, and then he was going to cut Yoko's ponytail off, and Beefcake's not even here. So, you could kind of tell, like, all the shit they had promised was kind of slowly not happening, and then when Hogan had also said he was going to slam Yoko, and as the match was going on, and he never slammed him, that also seemed like something weird was going on. You know, it was all these things that you just assumed were going to happen, didn't happen. That's when the flags kind of started to raise.
Right.
So, obviously, like you said, Yoko swashes him with the leg drop. Hogan's, he hits a couple bonsai drops afterwards, and they cart Hogan off, and Jim Ross says, we're going to get updates, and those updates would never come. And it'd be a long time before Hulk Hogan shows up again or is mentioned in any kind of positive light.
No.
He actually, I think it was a couple months later, it might have been the September magazine. There was a picture of him riding a motorcycle, and that was just kind of odd. So, but they were actually still talking to him. Hogan talks about this in his book, and I think Bischoff did too, that when Bischoff started, you know, snooping around Thunder and Paradise set trying to get Hogan to jump to WCW, Hogan actually went, and Vince got a word of it. Vince tried to bring him back in 94. He didn't want him to go to WCW, and then Vince, I think, ended up kind of changing his mind when he realized how much money it was going to take, and he was like, fuck it, go ahead. So,
yeah, and at that point, he would have, the promotion, well, I'll tell you one thing right now, and this could be part of our special, you know, we've been kicking around ideas for this. You know, the rumor was that, well, We won't get into it now. We'll get into it when we get to WrestleMania 10. But a lot of things could have happened if Hulk Hogan had come back in 94. Let's put it that way.
Yep.
But for now, Yokozuna is back on top. He is your World Wrestling Federation champion again. And Hulkamania is dead.
And another sign that something weird was up. After the match, Jack Tunney's in the locker room with all the Japanese photographers and media. And he just congratulates Yoko on becoming champion, which was weird, because you would think after what happened, he'd be back there chastising him and saying that Hulk Hogan's going to, you know, he doesn't even mention Hogan. He just comes back and congratulates Yoko, and that's that. So there were a lot of red flags going up as the show was continuing to go on.
Right. And Hogan walked off, you know, couldn't see, his eyes were all burned out and everything. And that was it. He was done. So Yokozuna is your new World Wrestling Federation champion. Good for him. He deserves it. And Hulkamania is done for now, for a while. All right, enough of that.
All right, our next match is an oft-forgotten eight-man tag match with four of the premier tag teams at the time. We have the Steiner Brothers, top challengers for the tag titles, teaming up with a brand-new team, the Smoking Guns, Billy and Bart. They had their first vignette air on the 424 Superstars, and from there on, for the next month or so, they had vignettes of them riding horses and shooting guns, and basically they portrayed two cowboys. So they made their Superstars debut on 522, and on that same day, this match was announced, and they take on the team of the Head Shrinkers and the tag team champions, Money Inc. Now, we must correct ourselves. We said that WrestleMania was the last appearance of Money Inc. as a team, but of course, as I said, this match is oft forgotten, even by us.
Yes.
So that match, they do team up here. And of course, the guns are portrayed by Monty Sopp and Mike Plotcheck.
Plotcheck.
Well, no, according to Wikipedia, it's Palklopek. So.
Oh, okay.
But they were teamed as the Long Riders in the IWF, International Wrestling Federation. Palklopek was Brett Colt, and Sopp was Kip Winchester. They were two-time IWF Tag Team title champions before signing with the WWF, making the debut. So just pretty white bread faces at this point, but they will become stalwarts and the main figures of the tag division over the next 3 years. So
now, speaking of the tag division, the tag titles would be bounced around a little bit.
Was that before this or after?
I believe it was before. I thought it was before anyway. Let me we'll have to double-check that. I'm pretty sure it got bounced around before that.
Let's see.
But the... obviously, Money Inc. had retained.
Well, hang on. Let's not talk about it if it's not here yet. Let's confirm first.
Let's see. List of. Make a list of champions.
Yeah, you're, no, it was right after this. The next night.
Okay. Oh, okay, the next night. Okay.
So we'll talk about it at SummerSlam.
We'll talk about it at SummerSlam. So, Money Inc., still your tag team champions. They won by DQ at WrestleMania over Beefcake and that other guy. So, here they take on clearly the number one contenders, which is the Steiner Brothers and this new team. The Smoking Guns against Money Inc. and the other hot heel tag team, and that is the Head Shrinkers.
Yeah, 7-minute match, kind of a weird match. Rick Steiner actually never even gets in the match, which I don't really understand. But
yeah, maybe he was hurt.
Yeah, it was kind of rushed anyway. They might have been better off just doing a tag title match here if they were going to start swapping titles anyway. I don't see why they didn't just put Steiner's Money Inc. on the card.
Mm.
But I guess they wanted the guns to be on TV, so, or on pay-per-view.
Right.
So whatever. 7 minutes. The guns get the big win. Billy pins DiBiase with an inside cradle. And that's it. Guns and Steiners advance on.
Yeah. So again, 8-man tag, nothing earth shattering, but but shows off some of the trying to get the tag division kind of back on track a little bit after the crap that went down at WrestleMania. It's nice to, you know, maybe see Vince probably wanted to just showcase some of the tag teams and see if the division can kind of float a little bit. All right, our next match is a big debut, one that I totally forgot happened here. I thought it happened at SummerSlam, but it actually happens here.
Yep.
Your World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Championship is on the line. The champion still, the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels, who lost at WrestleMania, but by countout to Tatanka, so he's still the champion, white belt and all, taking on the big man from Kona, Hawaii, Crush. Orange tights and all, fresh off his what I considered upset loss to Doink at WrestleMania.
Yes. Now, we have a lot going on before this match.
Yes.
These two actually were signed to a non-title match, which we'll get to in a minute why. But they actually fought to a double DQ in the King of the Ring qualifier, eliminating them both from the tournament. So they were scheduled just to have a straight rematch here at the show. Mm-hmm. And that is because on May 17th, Shawn Michaels was in the ring. He had come off two straight weeks where he fought your boy Jim Duggan, defeated him the week before to retain his title, and was out shit-talking, saying that he could beat anyone he wants, and no one can challenge him. And so he issues an open challenge, and a man jumps out of the crowd with a hoodie, sweatshirt, and jean shorts on, and reveals himself to be Marty Jannetty, making a surprise return. This is, of course, the same night as the 1-2-3 Kid Razor Ramon match. Jannetty puts him on the spot, challenges for the title. Vince McMahon backs Shawn into the match. So they end up fighting, and of course, in a tremendous match, great match.
Yes.
Marty Jannetty would win the IC title, one of the first great true Raw moments.
Yes, and this match was actually...
Well, there's a mix-up. Between this and a rematch later in June on Raw, it was either June or July, which one was actually match of the year for 93. Many people assume it's this one because this is the better match, but I think according to Observer and other sites, we always see the date of the July one.
Well, let's go. I'm going to go now to the Pro Wrestling Illustrated Awards.
But there's thought that they fucked up, that they really meant this one, that people got confused.
Well, what they have on Wikipedia is, it doesn't have it. Well, it says May 17th. So this is the one they have on Wikipedia.
Okay. Well, that's good. Then we'll go with that.
So that's what they have. They have this one.
All right. So this match, Shawn and Crush, was set to be a non-title match. Jannetty wasn't going to be on the show. Then on June 6th, Shawn got a rematch in Albany at a house show, and he regained the IC title with the help of his debuting bodyguard. He was unknown for 1 week.
Yep.
But in an interview here, Shawn named him. And also in this interview is another red flag regarding the Hulkster.
Gentlemen, what we have just seen, but I believe it's official, it has been confirmed, there is a new World Wrestling Federation champion, and he is Yokozuna. More on the condition of Hulk Hogan as soon as any details are available. With me right now, speaking of champions, the Intercontinental Champion, Shawn Michaels, you have a title defense against the big man from Hawaii, Crush. I'm very interested, after the night has gone the way it has, whether you believe lightning could strike twice in the same building here at the Nutter Center in the heart of America.
Well, I think we can agree that lightning definitely struck once. I mean, it struck Hulk Hogan, but that kind of stuff doesn't affect Shawn Michaels. I mean, I think we can agree that Hulk Hogan is not the caliber of superstar that Shawn Michaels
please,
is.
Michaels,
I mean, come on.
Give me
the
a
guy
break.
Is a dinosaur, and Yokozuna gobbled him up like a big old brontosaurus burger.
a little bit, you've been watching too much of that Jurassic Park. Now, Shawn Michaels, I'm very curious. We saw this man appear out of nowhere, out of left field, in Albany, New York, when you recapture the Intercontinental title. This so-called bodyguard, this insurance policy, what's his name?
What's his name? His name's my insurance policy, that's what it is.
Well, he's got to have a name. Does he talk?
Okay, no, I do the talk. You want to know what his name is?
Yeah,
I'll give you the info. His name is Diesel. As in diesel fuel, that which makes a Mack truck go. This is a Mack truck, and this man protects Shawn Michaels every inch of the way.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Get ready for more action.
Oopie-doo, Mack truck.
No, please. Stole the WC. Never mind. Yeah, anyway, first of all, I know the red flag because Hulk Hogan would never have gone for Shawn Michaels calling him anything.
Yeah, so dinosaur. Yeah. You know, making fun of him, putting over Yoko strong. Yeah, that's another super red flag there.
Yeah. But forget that, because we had the debut of the man known as Big Daddy Cool.
Why don't you give us his background?
All right. Kevin Nash is his real name. He played basketball in college, and he was actually a very highly touted high school prospect. He was actually the number two high school player in the country in 1977. You know who the number one guy was?
Yes, your boy. We know.
Yep. Kid from Everett High School in East Lansing, Michigan. Magic Johnson. Anyway, he was good enough to possibly go pro, but his knees kind of turned to jello, so he could not play. After toiling in the indies, he spent some time in WCW under two of the most hilarious but oft-forgotten cult characters of all time.
He was no... American flag.
No, he was not him. Thank God. He was Oz, managed by... I don't remember who he's managed. He's managed by some weird guy with a rubber mask. It wasn't the Wizard.
It was Kevin Sullivan. But yeah, he
that's
was
right.
Portraying the Wizard.
Yeah, it was Kevin Sullivan in a weird, goofy-looking rubber mask. And he was also a shady card shark by the name of Vinny Vegas. But Shawn Michaels caught him on a pay-per-view or on an episode of WCW Saturday Night or something and went to Vince and said, we need this guy. He's being wasted in WCW. We could really make him something special. And sure enough, here he is as the bodyguard of one Shawn Michaels.
Now, yeah, this was...
This guy's probably a bodyguard somewhere else.
This was the third straight show as a kid. I thought for sure Shawn's dropping the IC title. I mean, there's no way he's escaping another show against another big-time face. And Crush, obviously, position is a big-time face. I thought it was completely plausible that he would win the title here, even though Shawn had just regained it. But Shawn does retain his title, 11 minutes. Crush, again, screwed by Doink the Clown. He's outside the ring. The two Doinks come marching out. And Shawn's able to take advantage and kick super kick Crush and get the win. So Shawn's starting to use the super kick a little bit more.
Yes.
And he also worked on Crush's head to set it up, which is pretty cool. He ran his head into the post and then kind of kept stomping on it and beating it down. So
right. It
was a good, a decent match. And you could see Shawn glimpses of him starting to show as the guy that could carry these kind of matches, but not quite there yet. Because it's a solid match, but not as probably as good as it would have been a little bit later when Shawn is really in his groove.
Right, and we'll see Shawn. In fact, he, you know, once again, he dodges a bullet, and more bullets will be fired at him to come. But Crush again, you know, big lumbering power guy. Shawn did the best he could here, and he gets the win and retains his championship. And again, I don't think he calls it Sweet Chin Music yet.
I don't think that
name doesn't come for quite a while. But he does start using the super kick as his finisher, And Big Daddy Cool makes his presence felt around ringside as well. We'll see more of him, plenty of him, as time progresses. All right. Why don't you hype it up? We have come to the end of the line. Why don't you give us our King of the Ring Tournament Final?
Okay, yes, the King of the Ring Tournament Final. Bret the Hitman Hart coming off two big wins against Razor Ramon and Mr. Perfect. Taking on the man who received a bye, thanks to Tatanka and Lex Luger, and that is Bam Bam Bigelow.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
18-minute match, tremendous match. However, it looked like it was going to end a little bit earlier, because during the match, Luna Vachon appears, of course, with Sherry gone from the picture now, and Shawn Michaels obviously no longer needed Luna. He's never really with her anyway.
Right.
She needed something to do, so she comes out here and smacks Bret with a chair in the aisle, and Bret gets counted out. Bam Bam's announced as the King of the Ring winner, and this whole night is like, what the hell is going on? Hulk Hogan jobbed, Shawn won, retained his title, defeated Crush, and now Bret is jobbing to Bigelow? Well, not so fast, because another referee comes down, explains what happened, and they restart the match.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the 18-minute mark, Bret gets his infamous victory roll from Bigelow's shoulders and gets the win. I really love this match. These two had awesome chemistry. This match,
yes.
I don't think this one's on Bret's DVD, right? It's the one from Spain later in the year?
Yes. This match is on the great... Oh, no, I'm sorry. No, this match is on nothing.
Okay.
The Yoko Hogan match is on the Greatest Stars of the 90s DVD.
Right.
But the match that's on Bret's DVD is a match from Barcelona, Spain that has no... It has no... No commentary.
Yeah, and they too... Bret has always named Bigelow as one of his favorite opponents because they had great chemistry, and this match here is proof of that. They really wrestle well together. Bret bumps around beautifully for Bigelow, and Bigelow bumped well for a big man as well, and he was able to sell some of Bret's offense. And Bigelow's just a very, very good worker for a big guy. So these two have a really fun match to cap off the show. And I think it was kind of like an FU. Hogan jobs, he's gone, and now we're reestablishing Bret as the true workhorse and the true torch holder of the WWF. He wrestles 48 minutes nearly on the show in all three matches, nothing less than a three. And a peak of 4.5. So each match, great in its own right, different in its own right. Three different completely different style of match as well. So
yes, the exact total is 47 minutes and 37 seconds.
Yep,
just unbelievable. This is almost like the first of what would be many, shall we say, sorry, we screwed the pooch moments for Bret over the next year, where the WWF would kind of try to get him back on their good side after dicking him over in Vegas, and this is the first reward, if you will, the first peace offering between Vince and the management and Bret after what happened. Again, tremendous. 47 minutes and 37 seconds of great wrestling. Makes Bam Bam Bigelow look great. He continues to battle Bigelow, as we mentioned, over the summer. They wrestle on an overseas tour in Spain. It's on Brett's DVD. It is a tremendous match. Tough to watch only because there's no commentary. There's two matches like that on this show.
I'm surprised they didn't do an alternate commentary on those matches. Kind of odd.
Yeah, it is, because that's not the only one. The match he has a match on there with DiBiase that has no commentary either.
Right.
So. But anyway, great match. But what happens at the end sets the tone for almost the next 2 years of storylines. Brett leaves the ring, goes to the makeshift podium, interview podium with Mean Gene. Is it Mean Gene or is it Todd? It's Mean Gene, right?
Yeah, Mean Gene.
It is Mean Gene. There is a scepter, a throne, you know, a robe, a crown, and Bret Hart is christened the 1993.
The cunt is in the sink.
And Bigelow got the consolation prize, which was that. Brett is all decked out in his king gear, and then in walks Jerry the King Lawler, who says, this is a big joke. You know, you're making tournaments up for titles that only I own, blah, blah, blah. And eventually Lawler attacks Brett after the match.
And, of course, Brett would tell the world, mm-hmm. That Jerry Lawler actually really fucked his back up. He hit him with the scepter in the back really hard, and yep. Brett would have a lingering back injury thanks to that shot. But it looks pretty good. Mm-hmm. And the show ends with Lawler standing tall over Brett, obviously ready to kick off one of the next hot feuds for the summer. So
yes, exactly.
A lot happened on the show. Very, very historical show.
Yes. And overall, one of the best pay-per-views in history. Just for many reasons. Number one, a lot of dead weight, a lot of fat trimmed off the roster.
Hey, come on.
I got my 2x4.
I hope the copyright goes out on that on YouTube and you can never use it. Now, hey, is this for me and Toots? So I face Geigel, Mushnick, the final curtain. Vern, Fritz.
My friend,
Don Owen,
I'll say it clear,
the LaBelles,
I'll state my case, of which I'm certain, I've lived a life that's full, I traveled each and every highway, and more, much more than this. I did it my way.
The American flag.
How could you possibly splice those two together? Please. I give the show
it's a sad day. It's a sad day.
It is a sad day. It's sad because Bigelow lost. And it's sad because... I had to file some legal injunction. A tremendous show. I would definitely consider finding it.
Yeah,
on eBay or on Amazon.
Nostalgia reasons, historical reasons. It's just a fun show to watch. The commentary is good. You get some funny moments like the Razor Ramon line and the Wesley family and just a lot of history. Hogan, obviously Duggan's gone and Hogan loses. Yoko's a champ and the Lawler Brett stuff and Brett's awesome. You know, you got great wrestling mixed in as well. So just a lot going on and just a really, really fun show.
Yes, absolutely. I would definitely recommend finding it. You could probably find the Coliseum video copy fairly cheap on Amazon or on eBay. I think I got it for like $10 or something. So, but why don't we dive in?
Have you seen Sapphire Baby?
No, I haven't, Dust, but we're all still looking for her.
Keep looking. Anyway, why don't we dive into our feedback? Because, and you know what? Kudos, and you said it on the and we said it on the Facebook page. Kudos to the Place to Be Nation for a thread that was only up, what? Not even
I think I put it
six or seven
11,
hours?
Yeah, like 11 this morning, maybe.
And we've got a myriad of comments. of a feedback for you. So I hope you enjoy it. Why don't we dive in to the Place to Be podcast Facebook page feedback on this show?
All right, I'll let you start off. Go ahead.
No. No. I'm not doing it.
Start off.
Play the song instead. Go ahead. Matt Davis says...
I got my 2x4.
There you go. Matt Davis says that.
No, Matt Davis says... hang on. That's what he says.
Okay.
All right. Neil Trauma. Personal highlights of the show. JR, Bobby, Macho, and commentary. Wish they did more shows together. Your dad never beat my dad. And the white trash family of Hulk Hogan fans, including Wesley. What a fun show.
Yes. Mike Wilkinson.
Good.
Which is Triple Hermit, our good friend. I think this was Vince's way of saying I'm sorry to Brett, which I mentioned. This pay-per-view shows why Brett was the man in 92 through 95. Best King of the Ring by far. Hogan getting squashed was awesome and solidified Yoko as number one heel at the time. Lawler Brett got huge heat off of this match, which is awesome, and it was the end of my two least favorite wrestlers of all time, thank God. Hogan and Duggan. Thank you, Triple Hermit. I knew you and I had that much in common. All in the best show of 93. Hogan was not my least favorite wrestler. He was just time for him to leave.
But Corey Ferreira. Easily the pay-per-view of the year for 1993. First off, the Duggan era is over. Yay. First, Bret Hart deserves an MVP honors for the show. Three great matches in the night. A rematch with Razor from Rumble 93. Good opening match. Razor's become a good in-ring worker by Summer 93, and Bret easily hitting his stride at this point. Mr. Perfect and Bam Bam get victories to advance through, thank God, Duggan didn't go over Bam Bam. Tatanka versus Luger is nothing more interesting going with the... nothing much interesting going with the time limit finish. Adds drama to the final, having Bigelow get the bye right before the final. Semi-final match, Perfect and Bret have a great match, though still not as good as their match from SummerSlam 91. WWF title match, Yoko defeats the Egomaniac for his WWF title. Even on the way out, Hogan still needs to use interference in the finish. But good thing is, he's gone for the next 8.5 years plus. Mm-hmm. Eight-man tag, Steiners and Smoking Guns beat the heels. Another new team in the tag division, the Smoking Guns, another pivotal team of the New Generation era. Main event time, Bret Hart has a great match, which Bret wins the first King of the Ring tournament, even though he won King of the Ring back in 91 during his live event run. Overall, best show of 93 by far. Hogan is finally gone, and much to Scott's joy, Duggan won't be on pay-per-view for quite some time.
Yes. Triple Hermit adds after this, also something to add. When Yoko beats Hogan, you see that fan who looks and dresses up like Hogan have the most dejected look on his face, which was great. He could follow Hogan down south and be just as annoying down there. And I love the Perfect Bret promo, which is what we're just saying.
Brian Samek. Smack of the shit that was 1993. This was like a gold nugget amongst the crap. The tournament's awesome as Bret has three really good matches with Razor Perfect, which is better than SummerSlam 91, and Bigelow in succession. This was the show that let the world know Bret Hart was truly a phenomenal talent and that his late 1992 to WrestleMania title run would not be a one-time thing. The future's really bright for the Hitman. I would have preferred Bigelow in the final round, in the first round, and Razor at the end for booking purposes, as Razor was headed for IC title status that fall, and a finals appearance could have set that up nicely. Bigelow really wasn't going anywhere after this, so him in the finals didn't make sense to me. Bye-bye Hogan, enough said. I personally love the IC title match here, mostly due to the fact that the VHS that's on, the Silver Vision 2-Hour Hits from Heartbreak Kid, was the first one I got through the mail and had to wait for a couple weeks for, checking my mailbox every day for it. So I may overrate it a bit, but still good shit. After the show, 1993 tanked to me. Instead of Bret heading into an extended WWF title feud with Yoko leading to SummerSlam, the Lex Express is born and the ship began to fall. I personally hate Jerry Lawler's heel shtick in the WWF from 93 to 95, and it was a waste of Bret to stick him in that feud. I don't know if it was WWF doing it or not. Lawler was pretty good at Memphis, but his act in WWF didn't make me mad. It just made me want to change the channel. Finally, quick props to Duggan, who on his way out did have two okay IC title matches with Michaels on Raw over the spring, a regular match and a lumberjack match. With that in mind, one for the road, Justin. Oh, tough guy.
Yeah, one for the road, not 500 for the road. Matt Petticord. I haven't heard from Matt in a while. This is not only one of my favorite pay-per-views, but this was also a perfect example of a tournament done right and the start of something good for the promotion. Still to this day, I would call this the best of the King of the Ring tournaments. Bret Hart instantly gave the King of the Ring crown the credibility that it needed to have, and we got 50 minutes of Bret, which is an awesome amount of Bret. Also, how can you possibly say Bret vs. Perfect at SummerSlam 91 is better than the one here? Well, then I just don't understand you. Well, Matt, I agree with you. I think this one is better. Not that much better, but just better.
I agree. I think this one's definitely better. Mainly due to Perfect's health. Mm-hmm. All right, Karen Holland.
Exactly. The Hot Scott.
A great show that really continues the waves of change. Hacksaw Jim Duggan's tenure ends, much to Scott's joy, and I'd like to make a request for Justin to play the entire Hacksaw song from the WrestleMania album. We pretty much
he has. Maybe not all in a row, but he has.
Hogan is squashed by Yoka, and we bid farewell to the man who brought wrestling to where it is. While I'm sure fans were happy to see him go, he will be missed in the years to come. Finally, the King of the Ring tournament itself. Brett puts on three great matches to win the thing against Razor, Perfect, and Bam Bam. Brett really kicked it up a notch and showed why he deserved the title. Sadly, he shuffled into the mid-card feud with Jerry Lawler, and another roid monkey gets pushed into the main event instead. Overall, a great show that helped establish King of the Ring and its prestige.
Brian Anderson. Great show here. And with Hogan leaving, made it all the better. I was fairly young at the time, and looking back, can't believe that I liked him with all the crap he pulled and still pulls, but I'm guessing that a lot of wrestling fans my age can say the same thing. The show also launched the Hitman to new heights as a huge star and top-notch performer.
And I also want to let everyone know, Kieran posted some pretty good WrestleMania 9 feedback. We're not going to read it now because we got too much to get through. But if he wanted me to give it a plug, because he got it in after we recorded, so we didn't get to go ahead and read it. But check it out. Dennis Nunez, having just seen this pay-per-view last month at Classics on Demand, my views on the show are fresh now. This was the first WWF pay-per-view I actually remember seeing in my life. I was 6 at the time, and this was the show that started my lifelong love affair with wrestling and the WWF itself. I never watched WCW during any part of the 90s or the Monday Night Wars, and also considered a large part of it to be overrated and still do today. Brett stepped into a whole nother level with his performance on this night, ousting three top-level talents to become King of the Ring. This proves that Brett is a true ring general and can go against anybody. His best match out of the three is by far against Mr. Perfect. Those two could go for an hour, and I'd never get bored. Where was their Iron Man match? Just an excellent match by both guys that was much better than the SummerSlam match due to Perfect's back being healthy this time around. The slight bait and switch at the Brett versus Bigelow where it looked like Bam Bam won was kind of a nice touch, and it made Brett's victory even better at the end. Was surprised to see the championship between Yoko and champion, quotation marks, Hulk Hogan, was in the middle of the card. I'm pretty sure this might have been Vince's final middle finger to Hogan for swinging the swinging of his political penis at WrestleMania 9. There you go. This is your episode 69 reference.
There you go.
By having Hogan not only lose to Yoko, but lose it in the middle of the show. JR actually pointed out this is Hogan's first title defense since winning it 70 days ago. Rulebook, anyone? I love Sean's promo shortly afterward where he called Hogan a dinosaur and said Hogan wasn't the caliber wrestler he thinks he is. I love Sean. I also noticed when Jack Tunney congratulates Yoko afterward backstage on his victory, Tunney doesn't even hint it was disputed in any way. Ouch. This is also the final pay-per-view of Scott's arch-enemy, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, as he's squashed by Bam Bam in 5 minutes and Hacksaw sent packing far, far away to WCW. Overall, a great, fun show that still holds up today, mainly due to Brett's Superman performance and endurance as well as saying sayonara to that bald-headed, orange-tanned, juice-abusing, no-wrestling, two-faced, holder-backer of talent, untrimmed, mustachy, yellow-backed SOB. Fuck you, Hogan. Just fuck you.
Jordan McKinnon. This was this was truly the Bret Hart show, and he proved why he was one of the best at this show. Not only did Bret have three very good matches, he did it with three very different opponents that forced him to wrestle different styles. That is true. Hogan shows once again how outdated he is, but he heads out the door. You do have to tip your cap to the Hulkster for putting wrestling on the mainstream map. A good show, probably the best 1993 would have to offer.
How do I keep getting all the long ones? Jared Intel. It's kind of hard to believe that in just 2.5 months, the WWF went from putting on one of the worst pay-per-views ever at WrestleMania 9 to this great show. I think this brings credence to the belief that WrestleMania 9 could have been so much better, it could have been much worse, had the roster been utilized better. King of the Ring 93 is a show where WWF made the most of what they had on the roster, and the result is surprisingly a stellar show, easily the best of the 93. There's no debating that the show is carried by the three Bret Hart matches with Razor, Perfect, and Bam Bam. All three bouts are great and very different. So if you're a Hitman fan like me, this show is for you. The other highlight is the commentary team of Ross, Heenan, and Savage. One noteworthy highlight is when Heenan asks Ross to predict the winner. And Ross says, well, I don't know. And Heenan interrupts and says, well, of course you don't. You're from Oklahoma. The WWF rookie Ross gets jabs from Heenan about Oklahoma and milking pigs all night. But good old JR takes him in stride and plays off them well.
Forgot about that.
All that being said, even the undercard of the show is decent. The crap with the likes of Hogan and Duggan is relatively short. And the focus is actually on the new generation of stars. For the first time since late 92, Vince and his booking committee seem to be thinking clearly. Alas, it'll be short-lived, for in just 3 weeks they revert to their old ways, screwing with the roster in order to find an heir for Ducius Maximus Hulk Hogan in Lex Luger. Shall we call him Prickus Egotist?
Egotist.
Overall, a great show on its own that has aged very well and still holds up as a good watch today.
Yes. The master of the apostrophe, J. Arsenio D'Amato. This is like when Kane had to wrestle matches in red lights. Any pay-per-view with Hart Perfect is going to be a winner. Ross wasted no time getting comfortable with the WWF style. He really sold the King's beatdown of Bret as dastardly and heinous. Hulkamania died this day, but Stampamania will live forever. I don't do tricks, I just jump.
Jeremy Nichols, good lord, the feedback's getting long. Congrats, fellas. I personally love King of the Ring 93. Bret showed exactly why he was the best, with three different matches that were all great. Hogan dropping the toy, as he called it, was awesome. And Sean Crush wasn't that bad. Congrats, Scott. You made it through the Duggan years. Grade A.
Thank you, Jeremy. I appreciate that. It wasn't easy, as you can tell tonight. Our art expert, Jason Greenhouse. This was my favorite pay-per-view of 1993. Even though it didn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that Bret would win the tournament, it still ended up being a lot of fun to watch. Bret and Razor wasn't as good as their Rumble match, but was still a nice way to start the show. Bret, Mr. Perfect, was the best match on the card. The end of Hulkamania, this time for real, in the WWE until 2002, was a great moment as Yokozuna finally got the WWF title back from Hogan. The official introduction of Diesel to the WWF was a big moment as he would go on to be a key player in transition of the company over the next few years. The debut of the Smoking Guns and their mullets. I always liked the Guns, especially their later years as a heel team. Bret and Bam Bam had a good tournament finals match, with Bam Bam carrying most of the match as Bret was still recovering from the awesome match he had with Mr. Perfect earlier in the night. Overall, a pretty good show. By the time we get to SummerSlam, things really start to change.
Eric Cafiero, without a doubt the best pay-per-view of 93 for WWF or WCW. Bret and Perfect were at their best from the great pre-match interview to the match itself, but poor Scott, Hacksaw's now gone, so I think the tribute next week for the vault you should do, Fall Brawl 94. Ho!
Zip it, Eric. Austin Pfaff. Decent event with an interesting... yeah, to start from the beginning again. Decent event with an interesting concept that would launch careers for years to come. Bret's streak of wins here were amazing. However, I feel that maybe Bret Perfect could have been a better finals and then leave off Lawler to tag until maybe Raw, because it just ruins Bret's moment. Decent tournament overall. Hogan is finally gone, and it just so shows how far we've come as far as camera technology goes. A decent eight-man tag that didn't hurt and an average IC title match.
Jeff Miklos, RIP Duggan's WWF career. Now I know how Walt Whitman felt when he wrote, "Oh, Captain, my Captain."
Ryan Schmock. King of the Ring 93 was a pretty good event for an early summer pay-per-view. Shocked that they did not do the blow-off to the Undertaker-Giant Gonzalez feud here. Then Undertaker would feud with Hughes going into SummerSlam. They should have had these two matches as dark matches. Adam Bomb and Johnny Polo versus Tito Santana and Virgil, with the heels going over, and Jerry Lawler and Doink the Clown versus Marty Jannetty and Bob Backlund, with the heels going over once again. And then this match would be on the pay-per-view. What would you two book this match together? Jesus.
Me and Ryan Schmock are very good friends.
Papa Shango and Damian Demento versus Owen Hart and Kamala, with Shango and Demento winning. What? Hogan losing to Yoko was the right move, and I believe they were planning Hogan Gonzalez for SummerSlam.
My
Hogan
Lord,
and El Gigante.
El Gigante versus Hulk Hogan.
A very overall good pay-per-view. So once again, an unbelievably awesome job. An awesome job,
yes,
by the loyal Place to Be Nation for having this thing up for a grand total of, 6 or 7 hours, and coming away with some awesome feedback. So thank you very much.
All right, we just got
got five comments on Graham Cawthon's History of WWE site. Yeah. And go ahead, start.
Brandon Whitehead, my younger brother and I were in attendance for the first King of the Ring. Years later, I look at the card, I can't remember most of the matches. What I do remember, the show ain't that great, folks. Well, I think everyone else pretty much disagrees, Brandon.
Yeah. Paul Frazier, was the guy whose camera blew up James E. Cornette? No.
No, that was a rumor at the time that it was him, but it was actually Harvey Willman. Eric Thompson, Paul, no, I don't believe it was. I thought it was a decent show, not the best King of the Ring card ever, but better than 95 when Mabel was in the main event. Plus, how can you forget Hart Perfect? Brilliant match.
Eric Thompson, well, you just said that. Jay Hinchy, and we'll do his two comments back to back. I'm going to disagree with Brandon and say the first King of the Ring pay-per-view was really good overall. Bret Hart going the distance in three great matches, and the tourney against Razor Ramon, Mr. Perfect, and Bam Bam is one of my favorite memories of the Hitman. I also like the Lex Luger-Tatanka match a lot, with both guys going to the time limit draw. The WWF title match with Hulk Hogan and Yokozuna is pretty memorable for the camera explosion. I remember watching this pay-per-view as a kid and just being stunned that Hogan lost that way. HBK Crush for the IC title is not bad. The only thing I remember from it, though, was doing Cost and Crush the match. And, of course, Jim Ross did an excellent job calling on commentary with Bobby Heenan and Macho Man. Also forgot to mention the King's beatdown of Bret Hart during the King of the Ring. And that's it. Good night, folks. Is there a better way to end the show? Of course there is, but anyway.
Well, it's a sad ending. It's a bittersweet show here, King of the Ring 93. Yes. The end of two punching bags that we've beat on over the last however many months we've been doing these. So
yes, exactly. But great show, though, folks. And again, Amazon, eBay, it can't be that expensive. Hop on there and grab it. It's definitely a show to have in your collection.
Yes, I agree. So with that, we're going to start wrapping up. We hope you enjoyed the show, as always. Of course, another great Vintage Vault. We'll be back next week with SummerSlam 93. We'll continue through 1993. We'll see how things really begin to change with Hulk Hogan now gone from the picture. We'll be back later this week, as always, with the wrestling headlines. Baseball playoffs will be underway, so we'll talk about that.
Do our Week 5 picks.
Yes, as well. So thank you, as always. And Scott Criscolo.
Mm-hmm.
You have 99 problems, but that bitch Jim Duggan is no longer one. Good night.
Peace. So advertisers can give them more cash for ads, fuckers. I don't know what you take me as, or understand the intelligence that Jay-Z has. I'm from rags, the richest niggas, I ain't dumb. I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. Hit me. 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. If you have a girl problem, I feel bad for you, son. I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. Hit